Welcome to this summer's Reader's Theater. My name is LaVon Hodges, and I am the announcers for this year's play. Our production is entitled Unitarians and Indians. It examines a once-forgotten episode in UU history in the 19th century, during which a church, with the best of intentions, tried to civilize Native Americans, then called Indians. First, let me introduce the cast. Ulysses S. Grant, President of the U.S., played by Dick Albert. General William T. Sherman, Commanding General, U.S. Army, played by Stuart Fink. Reverend J. Nelson Trask, a Unitarian minister, played by Bob Meyerson. Lydia Marie Child, a nationally known advocate of Indian rights, played by Joe Murdoch. Ouray, the Arrow, chief of the Ute Indian tribes, played by Bob Britton. Now, I would like to give you some background. From 1870 to 1878, at the request of the U.S. government, representatives of what was then called simply the Unitarian Church took administrative charge of the Ute Indian Reservation in Colorado. They were one of several Protestant denominations that attempted to aid the government at this time in its policy of civilizing the Native American population so that they might find their proper place in white society. Our production imagines a meeting between representatives of the U.S. government, the Ute Reservation, and other reformers, all of whom were attempting to develop new ways of dealing with Native Americans that did not rely on past methods of coercion and extermination. Please be aware that the words you will hear try to reflect accurately the beliefs and attitudes of the 19th century and therefore will not be politically correct according to present-day standards. The scene is the Oval Office in the White House, Washington, D.C., on an afternoon in 1876. As the play begins, President Grant is convening the meeting by welcoming all the participants. Let the play begin.
I wish to welcome you all today. For some of you, it has been a long journey, and I appreciate your making efforts to be at this meeting. I have invited you all to the White House today to review the progress of your efforts in Colorado to better fit our Indian brothers and sisters to become full members of Christian society. In this way, we hope to better ensure the peace and tranquility of our Western lands. One of you, the Reverend Nelson Trask of the Unitarian Church, specifically asked to be included today because he was among the first ministers to be assigned to implement our new policies at the Ute Indian Reservation. Before we begin, I would like each of you to stand and introduce yourselves so that we may all know each other better.
Thank you, Mr. President. I'll go first, if you all don't mind. I am William T. Sherman, presently Commanding General of the United States Army. I am here because it is my responsibility to implement our government's new policies successfully regarding Indian settlement and pacification.
My name is J. Nelson Trask, and I am an ordained minister of the Unitarian Church. An appointed agent of the government, I was responsible for administering the affairs of the Ute Indian Reservation at the Los Pinos Agency in southern Colorado from 1871 to 1872. I ask to be present today because I have an intimate knowledge of how our program has successfully begun to assimilate our poor Indians into our more advanced society.
I believe I'm next. My name is Lydia Maria Child. and I am present today at the request of President Grant, who has graciously agreed to incorporate some of my ideas about betterment for our Indians into his new programs and policies. Thank you, Mr. President.
I come here as chief of the Ute people. We do not see ourselves as poor Indians or as people who need to be bettered or advanced in any way. Instead, what we seek is justice from the Great Father and from his warriors who he so far has sent only to slaughter and dominate us. This must end, or there will never be peace between us.
Well spoken, Chief Huray. Let me proceed by first having General Sherman outline our new government policy in regard to Indian affairs.
Thank you. Let me first say that our past efforts to contain the Indian problem by military means alone have not been met with much success, as the recent defeat of General Custer at the Little Bighorn sadly indicates. Therefore, our government now stands fully behind the 1868 Indian Peace Commission's recommendation that Indian residents on established reservations is imperative. Here they can be educated and trained to assume their proper place in our society. This reservation plan has now been fully implemented. From this time forward, we view it as the only workable means to achieve the full peaceful participation of the Indians in our democracy. Without this program, there will never be any future for the Indian in our society. As commander of the United States Army, it is my responsibility to see that this program is fully and resolutely enforced. That is my principal goal at this point as I see it.
But great warrior Sherman, these reservations are like prisons. We cannot leave them and we cannot live there. Our people are not settlers. We have always moved from place to place according to the season. We are not farmers, we are hunters. But you have killed all our game. Now you say we must stay in one place and raise crops? But even if we tried to do this, it would be impossible because the land you gave us is worthless. We will be reduced to being beggars if we continue to live on the reservation. If we stay there, my people will die.
What the chief is saying, General Sherman, is largely true. Most of my colleagues in the Friends of the Indian Movement agree that conditions similar to what the chief describes exist in most of the reservations that have been established in this country. Is there not some way that the Indians' just grievances can be fully and finally addressed and corrected?
Before you answer, General, let me inform Mrs. Child of some pertinent facts. You see, Mrs. Child, the Indians have been granted extensive land rights to property that is, shall we say, less desirable for a very good reason. The reason is that these lands contain no known valuable resources, such as gold or precious metals, which are the things that the white majority deeply desires. If the land did contain such things, the government would have no way of guaranteeing the safety of the Indians' possessions or property from constant depredations and trespassing by the whites. These reservations are not fenced, and they are not routinely patrolled by our troops.
Do you hear, Mrs. Child, how even the Great Father loves to play with words? He says the government gave the Indian bad land to protect him, and that therefore the bad land is better for him. It wasn't because the whites wanted the best land.
Now, I don't mean to suggest, Chief Huray, that our government sought to deceive the Indian. We were merely trying to take account of all the circumstances.
All the circumstances? Of course. And you and your warriors made sure that the circumstances favored the whites.
As you wish, Chief Huray. Please continue, General Sherman.
Certainly. In addition, Mrs. Child, I must tell you that these reservations are not meant to be a permanent home for the Indians. Instead, they are to be a temporary sanctuary where they will learn the English language, proper industry, farming, useful trades, and Christian virtue, so that they can eventually be assimilated into American society as full members.
You see what they are saying, don't you, Mrs. Child? They are saying we must stay on the reservations until we stop being Indians, or until we all die of despair and starvation.
I believe you're being overdramatic, T4A. My experience at Los Pinos tells me that the Indians can make the necessary adjustments in order to successfully join our more advanced society.
Of course, Reverend Trask. We very much need to hear your personal testimony about how you and your church have implemented our program. I'm sorry I did not allow you to speak sooner. Please enlighten us further.
I'm sorry to interrupt, but Agent Trask, how can you say that your society is more advanced than ours? Your society butchers game and our people mercilessly every day. We do no such thing to your society. In what ways are you more advanced?
I do not wish to be argumentative, Chief Oray. Perhaps we can discuss your question at a later time. Now I merely wish to describe our efforts at Los Pinos.
I'm sorry for the interruption. Please continue, Reverend Trask.
Our goals at Los Pinos during my tenure were to maintain a strictly honest administration of government affairs, freed of the corruption, graft, deceit, and incompetence that has plagued the dealings of whites with our Indian population from the very beginning. Furthermore, we always tried to meet and work with the Indians in the humane Christian spirit in order to save them from trickery, robbery, intemperance, and the other vices of frontier life. In this way, we feel they might, through us, witness the better phases of Christian civilization.
I must compliment you, Reverend Trask, on the merits of your work. It is refreshing to see involvement with the Indians finally commencing on such a high moral plane.
Yes, it is excellent. And what is the result of your labors?
During my assignment, my staff and I were able to assist at least 14 different families to learn English and to utilize agriculture and farming to improve their lives and begin a more settled, productive existence, free of the toil and strain of their past migratory style of life. The crops that were most successfully raised included potatoes, corn, garden vegetables, and oats.
Great Father, 14 families, including all the relatives, that amounts to about 100 people. 100 out of the thousands that make up our tribes. What about the rest of us? And what about the fact that some of those crops the agent mentions were planted by whites that he hired to work so that he might make a good report to you?
Is this so, Reverend Trask?
Well, it is true that I did have to hire some white friends to supervise our Indian students. But I assure you that our Indians did most of the work.
I know you need to speak this way to impress the Great Father, but it is my belief the whites you hired did all of the work, and the Indians present just observed.
Mr. President, despite what the Chief says, it is certainly true that our Indians were present at the worksite and came to the classes we gave about planting methods and crop rotation.
They came and were present out of desperation, I'm sure. The rest of us knew nothing would grow, and even if it did, it would be killed by the frost, dried up by the drought, or eaten by grasshoppers.
Please, please, Chief Oray, you should be grateful for even small progress. At least it's a start for your people toward greater self-sufficiency. But on that point, General Sherman, in what ways can the Indians be induced to participate more fully in our efforts to bring them the benefits of our way of life?
I believe, madam, they will see the light soon enough. If they leave the reservation and resist us by trying to take up their former ways of life, we will pursue and kill them, man, woman, and child. If they stay on the reservation and do nothing, we will feed and clothe them, of course, but eventually they will never progress and will die in poverty and dishonor. However, if they choose to improve themselves on the reservation with our help, they can then go on to a better life elsewhere. It is really quite simple.
I believe, General, you are being too blunt for Mrs. Child. Actually, madam, our overall goal in the new Indian program is to help our Indians to lead more productive and successful Christian lives so they can become an asset instead of a hindrance to our society.
Thank you for clarifying the General's remarks, Mr. President.
But Great Warrior Sherman sometimes speaks more clearly than the Great Father because he does not try to charm with words. He speaks the truth. He says we are his prisoners until we give up being Indians. He says if we do not give that up, we are doomed.
I do not believe your choices are so stark, Chief Oray. What could be wrong with trying to gain more knowledge and improve your lives? What could be wrong with becoming a full and participating member of our society? Surely your people, in their heart of hearts, would want that. In the end, it would bring them a better life. Even more, it would give them hope and happiness. Your people have to realize that your old way of life is gone now. There is no turning back.
I couldn't agree more, Reverend Trask. For the Indians, the choice is clear. They must choose between either assimilation or annihilation.
The General, as usual, does not mince his words, but I think the time for our meeting is over, and I want to thank you all for coming today. This has been a most enlightening experience, I believe.
Great Father, it certainly has been enlightening to me. I can understand the designs of you whites more clearly now. I came here reluctantly, but at the urging of my people. Their hope was that I would bring them back some encouragement and news of relief for their suffering. Now I can see this will not happen, and I return to my people with a heavy heart. Now I see that our only hope is through struggle. Not on the battlefield, of course. We are no match for the whites. No, we must struggle by rebuilding ourselves and our minds among ourselves, so that our way of life is never lost because it is our foundation. It is the testament of our ancestors, our beliefs and understanding of life and purpose. This is our way of life, and this is what keeps us strong. It is only through knowing and gaining strength by living our own way that someday our people may meet you, not as slaves, but as equals. Only then will we and you know the true meaning of community and happiness.
Well said, Chief Oray. I wish you and your people the utmost success in your endeavor. Wouldn't you agree, Mr. President?
Of course. Chief Oray, would you like the General to escort you out?
No, thank you, Great Father. I know where the back door is. And the Great Warrior and I will meet again. But next time it will be at my invitation.
Author.
I would now like to introduce the author, Al Murdoch.
Yay.